You're listening to 84, the podcast for startup marketers and entrepreneurs, where you learn everything you need to know about marketing in the B2B space that you can use to grow your startup and make an impact to your business. In today's episode of 84, we have a very exciting episode here for you today, or I do rather, and I'm really excited to bring you Sam Parr, founder and CEO of The Hustle, one of my favorite news sites. And each morning, The Hustle gives over a million people business news and information that they need to start their day. Now, they're one of America's fastest growing media brands, and they were started in a kitchen in 2014. Right, and they've got this amazing email newsletter, and they've grown to a business that does almost a million ARR every single month. So I'm really excited to bring you this conversation I had with Sam around writing, what makes good writing, and really how they make the copy at Hustle. So I hope you enjoy the conversation, and let's get right into it. All right, let's get going. Today on 84, we are joined by Sam Parr, founder of The Hustle. I'm really excited to have you on here, Sam. Could you introduce yourself to the audience in case they haven't subscribed to you already, and tell us a bit about what The Hustle is?
Yeah, so The Hustle is, when we first started, we described ourselves as a media company. So we're most known for The Hustle, which is a daily email that we give millions of people their business news and analysis and things like that each morning, and we deliver it via email. We have well over a million people who subscribe and get that each day, but we have a bunch of other stuff. So we also, well, we don't have it now, but we used to have a bunch of events where we would have tens of thousands of attendees at our conferences each year. And then our biggest thing now, or it's going to be the biggest starting in probably June, it'll be the biggest, is our premium subscription product called Trends, where it's a community with a bunch of interesting people who are building amazing stuff, but it's also a research tool. So we give people who are building companies all types of insights and information on the up and coming trends and case studies and cool stuff. It's almost like Harvard Business Review, but I think cooler.
So something that almost every content marketer at startup companies in the Bay Area aspires to be able to do is build an email list that is as engaged as the one you have, and that's grown to the size that you've built yours to. What do you think let Hustle stand out from the other content platforms that were doing the same thing around delivering tech news to people in the Bay Area?
Yeah, so I think that maybe I'll kind of give a philosophical answer, and then I'll give like a real tactical answer. But I think that when we started, I was 24, 25. I didn't know anything. And I didn't view, like if you talked about the word content marketing, maybe I would use it, but I didn't view it as like an academic thing, like a lot of people view it. And it was more so like, I'm just going to create cool stuff for my friends. And I come from a place where I was selling stuff in the past. I used to have a hot dog stand, and I was from Missouri. So I didn't exactly have this like Silicon Valley mentality of like, how do I like this academic kind of perspective on things. Like that wasn't how I rolled. And I more so was like kind of a loud personality. I have strong opinions on things, and I am a self-taught copywriter. So I know how to write. Maybe not well, but I know how to write effectively. And so it was more so like, I'm just going to create this interesting thing and share with my friends. So that's like the philosophical way, like this high level philosophical thing, which is like, so I had a little bit of an outsider's perspective. I didn't look at it as an academic thing. And like maybe some people will say like, well, you guys like kind of like broke the rules of this and that, and it worked, but that's not how we started. It was, I don't know what the rules are. I'm just going to create interesting things for my friends. Like that was the mentality. Do you know what I mean? So there was definitely no like purposely do the opposite of what other people are doing. It was like, we're just going to do what is interesting to my friends. In terms of tactically, like there's a ton of tactics that I knew would work, but most people don't do them. And I didn't, like I said, I wasn't doing it because most people don't do it. I was like, well, this makes sense to me. So those things are like, we keep everything in the email. So to us, I don't care if you're on Safari or not. Like, if you're on your phone, it's the same space, whether you're in the Mail app or you are on Safari or Chrome. It doesn't matter to me. And so what we did very purposefully was we were like, wait, when we send this email to, let's say, 100 people, 50 or only 10% of them will click, but 50% of them will open it. Well, let's just put all the goodness right in the email so you can consume it. Don't even have to bother clicking out. So that was huge. We also added a ton of personality in there. A huge pet peeve of mine from day one has always been when brands talk, for some reason, people think, all right, you are one person from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and then you are a different person from 5 p.m. till you go to sleep. And like, why do you, so like people would use this stupid jargon. Like if you read someone's LinkedIn profile, they'll say like, my job was to inquire about this, then coordinate this and implement this. And I was like, why do people talk like, why do they think they need to talk like that? Like, you can be a smart professional individual and still use simple, easy to understand language and even funny language and quirky language. And so I really embraced that early on, and our team embraced that early on. And I think that set us apart and still sets us apart. Like, the way that we write and the way that we speak, it's incredibly rhythmic. That's our goal, is to make it like a rhythm, like almost like a rapping, to like have beautiful in that sense, but simple and basic words that any fourth grader can read and understand.
So are there any tools you're using? Are you following a certain cadence in the copy or a set of cadences that you require a copy to have, and testing it to make sure it's below a fifth grade flash reading level? Or is it just built into
I didn't need a tool to do that. Like, I learned how to do it. So like, it didn't come natural. Like, naturally, I was not a great writer. I was always really good at speaking. But even at a young age, I would read books like Influence by Robert Cialdini and How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Carnegie. And I definitely studied, like, how do I persuade people to do stuff? How do I make them feel things? And there is absolutely like a story arc that you can study. So I definitely studied that. But then when I wrote, I just was like, what I did was, before, when I learned to write, I would find people who I enjoyed. So that could be like The Great Gatsby or The Catcher in the Rye, but also loads and loads of famous advertisements, movie scripts, things like that. And I would write them all out by hand. I would literally get them like word for word and just write them out by hand. And that kind of taught me how to write, like how to use rhythm to my advantage. It also taught me, like, I could feel the texture of someone's writing. And so I used that early on. And then when I was trying to teach people, I found this great tool called Hemingway. And what it does is it tells you the reading level that you're at. That you're writing at. And I definitely can use that. And people find that effective. What else was there?
Did you do the Gary Halbert copywriting challenge where you copy like 20 or 30 of his books or letters by hand?
Definitely. Yeah. Yes. So I would lock myself, when I was 23, I locked myself in a room for months, and I had this thing called copy hour. So every day for an hour or two, I would write all this stuff out by hand, and you start seeing trends. And I always tell people, it's kind of like when you learn to play guitar, like when you're handed a guitar, you don't go and try to write like a hit song right away. Most people don't. Typically you go and copy Green Day and Jingle Bells and this and that and that, and then you start seeing like commonalities between things that you like, and then you start making your own art. And that was kind of what I did.
Absolutely. So I've done the same thing with the Gary Halbert copywriting challenge. What I haven't done, and what I found interesting, is that you copied movie scripts and books and fictional books as well. And I think while it's common for people that are serious about copywriting, definitely in the B2B space, to do the Gary Halbert challenges, things like that, it's really uncommon for them to step into the fictional writing area and start to copy things from there. So perhaps that is one of the defining factors that influenced your ability to write The Hustle and write it so well.
Yeah, I just didn't want to be one-dimensional. And I think that a lot of copywriters can be great at selling, mm-hmm. but they it's kind of one-dimensional. And I think that I just wanted more tools or more weapons in my arsenal, which is it's odd. I don't really like love writing. Like if someone said you have to write a book, I'd be like, oh, I do not want to do that. I love the result that I get from it, but I don't literally want to sit down and do it. I don't enjoy it. But I want it to be I want it to be dangerous. I want it to be skillful. And I think that you need, and I don't think I can write like great fiction. Like that's hard for me. But I want it to have a well-balanced skill set to where I can kind of, I don't know. I can do it. I'm fucking skilled. Like I like cut my teeth on this shit. I'm really good at it. And it's, right. and I worked my butt off at it.
So something I've struggled with as someone that manages content marketing campaigns for companies is when I bring on outside talent for writing, I find that there's like, sometimes they're just lacking skills or they have a hard time writing the way I would want them to write. What do you do at The Hustle to train your team to write like you?
Well, so let's just like say this early on of this conversation, which is writing is a skill set and a talent. So it's just like running fast, jumping high, being good at coding. Like some people, so like there's talent exists, right? Like some people are just great. There's something about them that's just great. I think that I was not one of those people who was just great, but I was great at talking. I could always talk to people. When I was 10 years old, I could have a conversation with anyone about anything, and I was always articulate. I was not a great writer, though. So there is this like talent. And then there's like this skill set, which is like you're just going to cut your teeth and you're going to like just dribble the ball and you're going to shoot 100 shots or 1,000 shots a day. Like you definitely can maximize the talent that you have by, you know, repetitions. And so, but most people, the weird thing about writing is it's not like coding in that you have to be like, people look at coding and they're like, you either can or you cannot. The problem with writing is physically most everyone can do writing, and they think in their head, well, if I can do this, therefore like I could be great or I don't need to practice because I already can do it, right? That's not the reality. And so that's why I think most people actually suck, is because they don't practice it because they think that like they have it, and they also don't like look at it like a skill set. And so I think that for the majority of situations with clients and things like that, the reality is they just suck. Like they're just not good. And that's not a bad thing, right? That's just how, I mean, like, I don't expect you to go and build me this couch without like, I don't expect someone just to like, here's like a hammer and some wood, just fucking figure it out. Like it's hard. It's hard work. And so with us, we recruit talented people. They have to have talent. And then also the way that we train them is we have them do exactly what I did, which is I write it out by hand. They copy word for word different stuff that we've done that we like, and then they eventually get the flow and they discover it. I think that there's also two things that really matter. The first is I always call it general and then specific knowledge. So with general knowledge, what I've seen amongst great writers is they generally consume a whole lot of information. And because of this, they have a general knowledge about a whole lot of stuff. And that helps a ton with writing, because with writing, it's really not just about putting words to paper. It's more so about communicating certain emotions and ideas in an effective way. But people think writing means like writing beautiful language. Well, you have to have this general knowledge. And so I recruit people who I think like we have this guy, Zach. He could tell me all about running. He could tell me all about this weird scam that exists out there. He just could tell me about stuff. And then now let's go a step deeper. There's specific knowledge. So people who actually know their stuff, and that is harder to find. It's hard to find people who like are experts in business news and understand like all this stuff and can communicate. And so I look for specific knowledge. So you just have to be an expert. But then I also look for general knowledge, which you could actually, for I bet with a lot of content marketers, you can get away with general knowledge. I mean, you could read a book and pretty much understand something. That was kind of rambling, but hopefully that somehow answered your question.
No, it did. So you just have them do what you did, which is copy the text by hand. Now, what do you think it is about copying it by hand that changes the way you process it than if you were just to have them type it or make a video talking about it?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Okay. I think that, I don't know. It's almost like, I think that when you I think you can type significantly faster than you can handwrite. And so handwriting it is like a forcing function that makes you learn it a little bit faster.
Someone just rang your doorbell. I don't know if you want to get that.
I know. Hopefully my wife will get it. It's our Instacart or something like that.
Okay, great. When you sit down to create the hustle email, what does that process look like? How many people are involved in it? Do you go through multiple review cycles? Does everyone own their own piece of it? Is there a certain time of day?
So you're going to get a kick out of this. Right now, we basically have one person writing it.
Okay.
It's crazy. When I used to write it, we've had people who have worked here who no longer work here, and they're really slow at it. My personal skill set. Now, the reason why I'm not the best at this is I don't like doing it. You have to like doing it. Nick is our editor on the daily, and he loves news. Like, he just like is a nerd. I'm a news nerd too. I can talk about news all day. I'm very fascinated, but I don't literally like the act of writing it about it. But I can do it. And so when I did it, what I would do is each morning at about 11 or noon is I would see what's going on in the world. I would also email people and try to get some stories out and see what if there's any insider information I can get. And then starting at about 2, maybe 1, I would start banging it out and writing out my thoughts. And what I would do is I would write out a draft that sucked. And then the magic was in the editing. I would go back and I could edit it and I could make it great. And I could easily do 1,000 to 1,500 words a day doing that way. What Nick does is he's on the East Coast. So by the time he starts banging it out at probably noon, it's 3 o'clock on the West Coast. So there's enough information out there that he can kind of get a feel for what's going on in the world. We use Twitter a lot. So you can scan Twitter and see what's going on. And then he just bangs that thing out. I mean, one or two people who are really good, you don't need a lot of editing and things like that. Like, you can self-edit.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in doing things that way as well. Like, when we write articles at my current job at Maya, I write the whole article and day edit it myself and publish it. And we're able to hit a publishing volume that's much higher than other companies in our space. We're publishing 4 to 5 times more content per month than they are. And I think it really boils down to just having one person own it that likes doing it and can bang it out every day.
People like overcomplicate shit. Like, they say like, we need a copy editor. We need this. We need that. It's like, oh my God, you don't need it. What you need is confidence and just launch this stuff. You're just being scared and being soft. You just need to be confident in your ability and just do the damn thing.
I absolutely agree. I think that's the biggest thing that holds a lot of startup marketing teams back, especially in B2B, is that they write anything and then it has to pass through 7 or 8 people before they're okay with letting it out.
I won't work there then. I will say, you criticize my results. Don't criticize, just get out of my way and let me do the damn thing. If I don't get results, criticize that. But like, let me do what I need to do because I think it will work. And this is my point though, about all these brands, particularly B2B people, they say like, oh, you have to use this like flowery jargon. No, 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 no. Everyone does that. If you want results and you want to stick out, talk like a human. Be a smart human, but talk like a human. And I can't stand that committee crap. I will not ever be part of that. Even at our company, I have a rule that I tell people when they create something, and I'll say, that's shit, that sucks. But you think it's going to work? Go try it. You know what I mean? And that's hard, but I think more people need that attitude.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's that concept in B2B about there's the brand voice, which I think it gets misconstrued because the brand is really supposed to talk like a person, just like you said. But many times the brand voice becomes this corporate jargon-filled piece of copy that's just impossible to read or connect to. Yeah,
it's horrible. It's like, look, if I met Obama, okay, Obama's like the highest of the high in terms of like, he's like this prestigious president, one of the most powerful people in the world. He's smart. He's articulate. Like, he's he's like, if you met him, you'd almost like want to bow. You don't want to be so formal. But that's not like what would happen. If I met Obama, I'd be like, Mr. President, how are you, man? It's lovely to meet you. I'm so excited to meet you. Like, I really admire you and I look up to you. And man, I just want to say, like, I really appreciate you. Okay, so like I was casual, but I was respectful and I was professional. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I would absolutely go to the president and be like, Mr. President, what's up? How are you? It's wonderful to see you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You wouldn't be
I wouldn't be like, good day, sir. Like, and so like, yeah. I think that what people need to understand is that you can use this common language and basic language, but say wonderful, amazing, incredibly insightful and professional and funny stuff.
Which it's really funny that this is still a point of contention in the marketing world, because Gary Halbert said this, David Ogilvy said this, every single great marketer or copywriter from history has said the same message that you're saying, is that write like the common people talk in order for your copy to be effective.
Right. And it go in, like, David Ogilvy has this wonderful ad that I like. It's a Rolls Royce ad. Rolls Royce is the most uppity, sophisticated, elitist brand out there. And the copy was like, the loudest thing at 60 miles an hour will be the sound of the clock.
Yes.
Right? Everyone who can read at a third grade reading level can understand what those words are. And that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas if you'd given it to a B2B marketing committee, they might have produced something like the world's most sophisticated and elegant automobile with
right. They'll say like made of like this type of wood and like the engine outputs X amount of cubic pressure. It's like, no, just like
no one cares. Yeah.
Yeah, just make it so anyone can understand it.
Right. Let's talk about the growth trajectory for the email list. When did it just kind of slowly accrue? Was there a particular event or set of tactics that really skyrocketed the subscription?
So from an outside perspective, we grew fast. From an inside perspective, when you're doing it every day, it doesn't seem fast. And so I think that I'll have to remember this off the top of my head. I definitely could be off by like a factor of, by a fair bit. But I think in the first year, we got to either 100 or 200,000 subscribers. And the second year, we hit 500,000. And the third year, we hit 1 million. And that seems fast, I guess, on paper. But it definitely doesn't seem fast when you're doing it. And so the way that we got to the first year, I did zero paid marketing. All I did was blogged. I blogged like crazy. And the math was, if I can get 1 million people to the website, and I can get 2% of people or 5% of people to sign up, that will get me to where I want to go. The year after that, we did a combination of things, including having an ambassador program, which helped our content continually like compounded on itself. And we were able to, the traffic just kept adding to it. And then we also did paid marketing.
Nice. That first year with the blog, when you say blogging like crazy, what does that mean to you? Because when many people hear that, I think some people think blogging 3 times a week is crazy. So
no, I can release 3 blog posts a day.
Right.
You just clear my schedule and get out of the way. I mean, look, I tweet 20 times a day. And so not all my blog posts were going to be like crazy good or in depth, but I could post a 500 word thought 3 times a day. And then I could do 1,000 to 2,000 word things a week. We had this weird thing where like our hosting got screwed up and deleted a ton of my old posts. But if you Google like Sam Parr, John Rockefeller, you'll see like a 2,500 word thing I wrote about the history of Standard Oil. And something like that would take a long time. That would definitely take 5 to 7 days. But I wouldn't have to work on that, 8 hours a day. It would be like, I would check in on it for 2 hours and do it. And then I could just like bang out this pretty fast stuff that definitely got results.
Now, when you were approaching your content strategy for the daily blogs, what was the system you used? Did you approach it from an SEO perspective, or you did keyword research, or did you just like think about topics you were really interested in? Did you have a content calendar?
Yeah. No, at the time, no. There was no content calendar. The content calendar was in my brain because it was me and one other guy, John, writing. And sometimes it was just me. And so, no, I didn't have a calendar. I would just, it was in my, I was good at that shit. I just knew how to do it. I mean, it kind of came natural. I did study a lot of people, though. And so what I would do is a combination of things. The first thing is the way a lot of people screw up with creating content is, first of all, you have to, unless you're like, so if you're, let's use Obama again. If you're Obama and you're this like well-known figure, and the stuff that you say, like he doesn't need to position it in a certain way. When he talks, if you are a fan of Obama, if you are a fan of a band, if they create stuff, you're gonna consume it. It doesn't matter what the headline is. Like you're gonna consume that. If someone wrote a blog post about you, it doesn't matter what the title is. You're reading that, right? So like there is a point where you don't need any tricks. But until then, they help. And what I always tell people is you have to have distribution baked into it. So before you even write something, you have to determine, is this going to go popular on Reddit? Is this going to go popular on Facebook, Twitter, through search, things like that? You definitely need, it helps to understand where you're going to get eyeballs from, because the way the method of distribution somewhat determines the voice and the content and the positioning and things like that. And so early on, what I would do is I had access. I would get ideas from a variety of places. So I had this tool called CrowdTangle, and I would follow companies that I liked, and it would show me which of their content in any given hour was getting, had like disproportional amount of shares on social. And that would, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's people, the audience likes that. Let me put my take on it. And so I would do that early on. I also did a really good job of getting traffic from Reddit. I've been on the front page of Reddit many, many times. And it wasn't because I gamed the system. It was just, I'm a user of Reddit and I knew exactly what type of stuff would get popular and I would create stuff for those people. So I always had distribution baked in to it. And I still do. I'm not like a big enough deal that I can just, you know, just turn Facebook Live on and be like, all right, everyone, here's my thoughts on X, Y, and Z. Maybe one day when I'm older, I'll be like a thought leader where I can actually get that done. Kind of like an author you like, or like, again, a president, band, whatever. I don't have that today. So I still bake in distribution.
Nice. So you're not just relying on ranking and SEO to get traffic to it, or featuring that post in your daily or weekly email. You're looking at other channels like Reddit or what other channels were you?
Well, no, I consider search and my email list to be channels. So I say I can get this popular in the email list, or I can get this popular on search. Mm-hmm. So in my head, I just think of early on, we didn't have a lot of backlinks to our website. So like ranking on search wasn't an option. Now we have, 100,000 links or something. I can rank for stuff. So, but like what a lot of people don't understand is like content is not content. There is blog posts that you want to be evergreen and you want to rank for on search. There is blog posts that are, will go get popular through social. Like, so early on, search was not our preferred method, but it could have been, like, and that would have changed how I would have created.
When you're, I really understand how to rank for search, but when you're trying to create content that's, we're really talking about viral content for social. I'm not very skilled at that. So I'd love to get your thoughts on what the process is. How do you go about understanding what the channel likes from social, and then creating, and the differences in writing for virality versus SEO?
Yeah, so let's, for search, I have the ability, for social, including Reddit, I have the ability to use so what a lot of people, they don't want to admit it, but everyone knows it's true, is like the headline and the picture and the description of the article is definitely the most important thing, because if you show it to 100 people, only like 3% of people, if you're lucky, will ever click on anything. So you definitely have to optimize for that. And then once I get them in the door, I can impress them. But with cert or social, I have the advantage of using a picture to tell a story. And so the way that I do it is my picture is the main story. My headline is the second most important thing. And then my description up top, and like this bar where you type your status. That's the third most important thing. And then the description of the headline is the fourth most important thing. And my eyes will go picture, headline, up, down. Like that's how, so people are listening. It goes picture, headline, status, description of headline. That's like the, that's like where your eye, or typically people's eyes go. And I would tell a cohesive story in that order. And so like I can make a headline, like for example, if I wanted to rank on, I'm going to take the same article, but I'll position it two different ways. For search, we wrote an article about Soylent, and we had this guy live on Soylent for 30 days. It was pretty wild. So for search, I would make it Soylent : I lived on it for 30 days. Here's what happened. Because people are searching for Soylent. So like I want it to be very clear what Soylent is. For social, it's more, I don't know if the right word is a contextual. It's where people like aren't seeking this out. So I got to grab their attention from whatever it is they're doing that day. And so what I'll do is I'll have a picture of a before and after photo of a guy who looks like maybe he could look exactly the same in them, but it's a before and after photo and it says before after. So that tells them that this is like an interesting like evolution of a person, which is incredibly intriguing to most people. The headline will not use the word Soylent. It will say, I lived on a Silicon Valley I lived on a meal replacement drink developed by Silicon Valley engineers. Or something like that, which may or not be true. And then the status will be like the status would be like, I lost 10 pounds. I feel horrible. And then the description would be like, here's a play by play day by day of what happened when I lived on this technology driven drink. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, so I just like have already thought about that story that I can tell via social. Whereas with search, I don't necessarily need that. Now, then in the body of the article, I will still like flavor it with tons of attention grabbing stuff. Like, because I know that that person has probably clicked on 1,000 links that day. And so I'm going to make sure my first sentence grabs their attention super hard. And then I'm going to make sure my pop-ups on my like button and all this other stuff, I'm going to make that incredibly unique because I know that they've already seen about 1,000 of them that day. And so that's kind of how I think about it.
Nice. Then do you write two? So did you write two versions of the article for Soylent, one for search, one for social, and publish them in two different pages on your blog?
In that case, I didn't have different articles, but I had different headlines. So the search headline, if you use Yoast, it's a plugin for WordPress. You can have a search headline and a social headline. So they're different headlines. The articles were the same, but likely if I'm going to, I would say I can write three articles a day, maybe five. Those types of articles likely will be under 300 words, under 500 words, and they will not rank on search. Maybe they will, but the likelihood is lower. And so if I was going to rank for search, I would take in that Soylent case, it just happened to be 1,000 or 2,000 words. And I wasn't going to change that because I needed I needed that much space to tell the story. But for, if I'm going to get eyeballs to my social stuff, it could be super short. It doesn't need to be long. But if I wanted to rank on search, those little 200 word like quick hitters, that ain't going to do the trick.
I remember that article on Soylent. That was actually one of my favorite articles from The Hustle. I thought it was really funny because I was considering drinking Soylent at the time myself. And
if you actually if you actually search that right now, we've just changed our website, so it doesn't look fantastic right now. We're fixing it. But yeah, that was like one of our very first articles we ever wrote. That got like 1 million people in a first month.
Right. So one of the questions I have, because when I'm telling my stories, they're not. It's not from the first person, right? It's not I installed an AI for recruiting. It's this company installed AI for recruiting. Can I still get away, you think, with using like I installed an AI for recruiting and this and this happened, and then tell the story about the company once the user gets into the article? Or
it's my preference that everything is in first person. I think that's far better because I think that you should have extreme transparency. So like some journalists would be like, well, I don't want to input myself into this. Otherwise it like ruins the integrity. It's like, okay, we'll just address that. say like literally say like, I'm going to keep this objective, but I spent my time doing this, this, and this. Here's how it went. And I just think that if you have this conversation with your readers, it builds trust big time. And so like, what's an example headline of that you're describing?
Well, let's take, hold on. I don't want to give a customer name, so I'll just pick a random company name. Cheeto Puffs installed conversational AI for recruiting and hired delivery line workers 75% higher.
Okay, what was the product?
Faster.
It was
Cheeto what? Puffs, whatever. I just
No. But installed what?
Oh, conversational AI for recruiting.
Got it. Okay, so you could say Frito. I spoke with the head of recruiting at Frito-Lay, and the way that they were doing things were X, Y, and Z, which maybe was adequate, but Cynthia spent like so many hours doing this stuff. I spoke to her. Here's her story. You know what I mean?
Got it. Okay. So I need to interject myself into the content more in order to really make a connection with the reader. Because I've been writing in this third person type of thing, like Frito-Lay's was doing this, this, and this, and then this happened. And instead,
I find it to be far more compelling. Like, this is the reason why, like, this, you're comparing, like, so, like, I remember when this whole Iranian ban or when some countries got banned, and I'm not placing judgment on or picking a side here at all, but when this whole, like, country ban thing happened, I remember Casey Neistat did this wonderful video and he held it up in front of his face. He goes, so this whole country ban thing, I wanted to know what was going on. So I went to the airport and I'm just going to talk to people and I'm going to let you see how they feel. Versus CNN and Fox News, they would describe it almost like a lab experiment where it was like, I'm here, this stuff is there. It's at arm's length, and I'm going to tell you what's going on. Whereas Casey just goes, no, fuck that. Here, let's go get the camera. Let's go look. Hey, so we're at the airport. What's going on here? Well, my mom's on this plane right now, and she's telling me that they're going to go, like, you know what I mean? And I found that to be far more effective in telling the story, far more interesting. And so I believe that that's the same case with a lot of writing, which is, I think it's a little more interesting to interject yourself. And if you can't do that, I still think you could say things like, I still think you could kind of have that mindset a little bit and tell a story in a far more interesting way.
All right. Well, we're reaching the top of the hour here. So, like, thank you so much for getting on the show with me today, Sam. And before we sign off, like, is there anything you want to promote? Is there anything you want the listeners to sign up for or check out that's new and interesting about The Hustle?
Yeah, if you want to get your business news from us, definitely go to thehustle.co and sign up. We also have this really interesting thing called Trends. So whether you're an employee at a big company or just starting out from scratch with your own deal, sign up for Trends because we have a really awesome community of people building amazing things. And we also have this incredible research where each week we spend all the time showing different problems that exist out there and how you can solve them. So sign up for that. And then if you ever want to be a nerd with me and talk about writing, I'm on Twitter. The Sam Parr is my handle.
All right. Thanks for joining me on this episode of 84. It was an absolute pleasure talking to Sam Parr, and I hope you got value out of my conversation with him around how to create better content and better copywriting. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave me a review on iTunes, and wherever you're listening, make sure to hit that subscribe button. I will see you guys next time on 84.